Time now to get up to speed with matters in the world of technology with Fevzi Turkalp, the Gadget Detective. You can follow him on Twitter at Gadget Detective, or you can visit his website, gadgetdetective.com. How's things, Fevzi?
Very good, thank you.
Good, glad to hear it. We'll start with the news story of the week, and it's potentially a very big one, isn't it? This whistleblower who is, according to one MP, breaking Facebook's secrecy wall.
Well, yes. Yeah. So this is Frances Huygen. She's a 37-year-old former employee of Facebook, and she quit the company. And before she quit, she copied a bunch of documents and took them with her. So you can imagine. So she took internal memos and all sorts of documents to back up her claims. And basically, she's now a whistleblower. She's she gave evidence a couple of days ago on Capitol Hill, basically saying that, well, all sorts of allegations, actually, but one that there was internal research. So she's been leaking stuff through the Wall Street Journal, and they've been publishing that there's been internal research done by Instagram saying that Facebook can harm young people, particularly young girls. Their self-body image, their propensity to suicide. And she claims that, you know, Facebook knows about these things, but knows how to fix it as well. You know, Facebook owning Instagram knows how to fix it, but doesn't want to because it puts profits ahead of people, is essentially what she's saying. Facebook obviously deny this, say that she's got it all wrong, that it's much more complicated than that. But it's quite interesting because they had to give testimony on Capitol Hill, as I say, and now British MPs are speaking out over this as well, which is I think quite interesting. You've got Damian Collins, who heads up the group of MPs that's working on law that will allow UK media regulators powers over social media, which is interesting in itself because, of course, these are international global entities. How much power will they have over a business that's not cited here? But it will be interesting to see what they can do. I think the biggest challenge in all of this is, first of all, for legislators to understand what Facebook is, how it works, and what the harms are. Now, with regard to the harms, obviously, you know, a company accused of harms may try and obfuscate somewhat what the truth is. But some of the questions being asked by sort of senators who clearly had their hearts in the right places showed me that they really didn't understand what Facebook is, how it works. You know, we had one senator trying to get them to promise to take down a particular type of account, and this account was an account where people give false information to set up the account. It was a piece of slang for that type of account. It's not a Facebook feature if people give false information, you know. So they kind of like got the wrong, there are lots of sticks to beat Facebook with, but they didn't pick them all up and use them. So
do they have anybody like you? Is there an interpreter? I wonder. You could almost call it an interpreter, couldn't you, to make sure that they are getting a grip on it? Do we know?
To be honest, it seems not from the comments that are coming out, but I would think that what they would benefit from is something like, as we have Sage for COVID to give scientific advice about COVID.
Yes, exactly.
What you could have is a group, an advisory group, which should be made up of people who used to work for those organisations in part as well, people who know exactly where the bodies are buried, as it were, and what the culture is. I mean, there was one, the whistleblower gives one example of, there was apparently, she alleges, there was discussion about the feature of whether or not it should be possible to share a story without having first opened it and read it. Yeah. And she claims that Zuckerberg, because if you think about it, if you give that ability, the benefit to Facebook is that there's far more stories being shared because not everyone reads stuff. They just like the headline and share it without reading it or looking at the veracity of the story. And as more stuff is shared, then more people will be reading the shared stuff, more people will be spending time on Facebook and Instagram and so forth, and therefore they will make more money. The whole business model of Facebook is predicated upon getting your eyes on the screen for as long as possible. In some countries, Facebook is the internet. By the time you combine WhatsApp, Facebook and Instagram, that's, you know, and they invest in those countries' infrastructure to put their products at, you know, front and center, as it were. So I think it's really, This is an interesting, I mean, it's been described as a big tobacco moment for Facebook and other companies. And there are, I wouldn't say it's a perfect analogy, but there are analogies because there are allegations of harm. Mm. There are allegations that the companies have done their research and know that the product has harmful effects. And I don't just mean about suicide and body image. I'm talking about things like undermining democracy, yeah. causing sowing division, you know, those sorts of things, you know, being a platform for hate. And yet it denies it. And in that sense, it is similar because if we go back a few decades, you know, tobacco companies were doing their own research, finding that their products were dangerous and still running adverts of actors in white coats pretending to be doctors telling us it was good for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, arguably the harm done by some social media companies to the fabric of society in the long term could be greater than that, the harm done by cigarette companies. And I think the analogy is reasonable, although not a perfect one. We have to understand the harm that can be done. And they're not all bad. There's great things about it. But see, I think this, the harm is built into the business model.
Mm.
And, you know, the fact that we don't pay for the service with money, we don't subscribe to it because they can make more money out of providing it in quotes free of charge. It's not mm-hmm. free, you're paying with your data. But then they just take all the data that you produce as you go about your business, about you, about who you interact with, about what you vote, what your sexual proclivities are, everything. They work it out and then they monetize that because they can target advertising to very specific groups of people. There might be 200 people in the country that they want to target or one of their advertisers want to target, and they can do it with precision.
Yeah.
It's you know, you should really let them run a country because they're very, very clever people. I mean, but also Facebook is like a country. Its population is like half the world's population. And when they have disputes with countries like they did with, for example, Australia where Australia yeah. said they had to pay for the news that they were republishing, they threw their toys out the pram in that they just said, right, well, no new services for Australia then.
Mm-hmm. Very
and Australia
interesting.
And Australia backed off a bit. So they're of the size of now whether they can push back against countries. So, you know, yeah, European Union and America and other countries have now to work together on a common set of standards that would allow them to regulate, because that's the problem. They're international.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. Now, how much point is there in individual countries saying all the right things and promising to do this, that and the other? It's a global business. It needs a global response, doesn't it?
Yeah, it needs a consistent yeah. response, even if yes, it doesn't yes. have to be the same legislation in every country. But also from a tax point of view, of course, you know, companies pay tax in you know, advantageous territories, let's say. We have to look at where their customers are. Except we're not customers, we're more like raw materials. That's the fact of it.
So interesting. Thank you for all of that. Food for thought as ever. And back to Fevzi Turkalp, our gadget detective. Part two is always the gadget of the week. What have you come up with this time, Fevzi?
Okay, well, it's an interesting one this week. It's from Nokia, and it's a tablet. And Nokia, I don't think, have produced a tablet for, I think, about 7 years. It's called the Nokia T20. It was launched 3 days ago. It's available on pre-order. I think it ships, I think, around the middle of November, but I'm not completely sure, to be honest. And it's an interesting thing because it's an Android tablet, and Android tablets have sort of waned a lot in recent years. The operating system has been much more focused on mobile phones and hasn't really looked very good and been very good on tablets. But there are signs with iterations of Android 12 that they're sort of starting to give tablets some love again at Google. Google being the people who write the Android operating system and then share it with the likes of Nokia. So this is the T20. It's an entry-level tablet. It's not super powerful, but I think if you look at all the specs, it's sort of a balanced specification, which is at least good enough across the range and rather good in some areas. So the processor is not, you know, as fast as an iPad, but bear in mind the cheapest iPad will be something like twice the price of this tablet. So this tablet, this price is a shade under £180. for the Wi-Fi version and shade under £200 for the Wi-Fi plus cellular version. So if you want to put a SIM card in it and use it, you know, right, beyond Wi-Fi. And by the way, a £20 difference is a bargain. You know, you should consider that version if you think you might ever need it. £20 is not a lot of money. Mm. 4 gigabytes of RAM inside for the software to work in, that's adequate. 64 gigabytes of built-in storage, which is also fine. But unlike our iPads, this has got a memory card slot. It's got a micro SD card slot, which means that 64 gigabytes, you can add another 512 gigabytes to that very affordably. Whereas our iPads are a bit like cars, where when the ashtrays fill up, you have to buy a new car. You know, you can't empty the ashtrays. And
you're doing well on the analogies today, may I say. I'm loving them.
Well, you know, it's actually the way I feel about it, you know, because, you know, Apple do this thing where the entry-level machine is kind of not outrageously expensive, but doesn't have enough of anything in it, like enough memory. And then you have to buy whatever memory at the get-go you think you'll need, the higher memory version of the iPad, in order to have it. And then they charge you lots for it. So to go from 64 to 128 gigabytes will be over £100, you know, so suddenly it stops being value. So this device, the T20, it's got 64 gig of storage built in, expandable with a standard micro SD memory card slot, which is great. The battery I particularly like. The battery is large, so you can get up to 15 hours of surfing the web, or 7 hours of video calls, or 10 hours of watching films. And not all of them, or, you know, some combination of those. So if you did nothing else, you could potentially get 15 hours of surfing the web, which is good for a tablet with a 10.4-inch screen, 2K display, aluminium back, so it's not, you know, all plastic. It's kind of a reasonable build. I like the speakers, because at this price point, tablets often have mono speakers, or if they have stereo speakers, they're along the short edge of the tablet where you have to hold it in portrait mode, and no one watches films like that, for example. So it's really nice that they've put stereo speakers left and right when you're holding it, what they call landscape mode, with, you know, wide mode, as it were. So there's that. The cameras on the front and back are basic, so you wouldn't, if you were interested in photography, you wouldn't, you know, use this for that. You know, at a squeeze, you can use it. But for things like video calls, absolutely fine, you know, no problem with that. It's got a USB-C connector, so it's got a modern connector with relatively fast charging, so you can charge at 15 watts. It's got a headphone jack. This might not sound like a big deal, but headphone jacks have been phased out on a lot of mobile phones and tablets, including iPads now. And the latest iPads don't have headphone jacks. And it's a pain, because then you either have to get an adapter to go USB-C to headphone, or Lightning to headphone, or you have to use wireless, which is not for everyone. So it's good, because you might stick this, you know, with the kids in the back of the car. Be good if they could have headphones plugged in, you know. No fingerprint sensor, you know, you just use a keypad. Comes with Android 11 with the promise of 2 years of operating system upgrades, which is good, because, again, one of the weaknesses of Android devices traditionally has been that you don't always get updates. So 2 years of operating system updates, 3 years of monthly security updates. Also comes with something called Google Kids Space, which is a way of parents exercising parental control over what apps their children use and how they use the tablet. Only comes in one color, ocean blue. It's very nice, makes it nice and simple, you know. It's not, yeah, sometimes yeah. They spend, you know, half an hour on a presentation telling you it comes in five colors. I haven't yet seen the bespoke covers that you can buy for it. If I see them, I will hopefully get hold of them and try. But there is a rugged cover available, and there's a flip cover available. 3.5 stars out of 5, basic solid tablet with long battery life, expandable storage, headphone jack, coming from a good trusted brand, which is Nokia. So I think, you know, considering the price point, it's, you know, I even considered giving it 4, but I've given it 3.5 out of 5. If it drops a bit below the RRPs once it's launched, the recommended retail prices, then my estimation would go to 4 out of 5. But I think it's really good, because you can always say, it's not as fast as an iPad, and the screen's not as good. It's a 2K screen, which is quite good enough. But it's half the price. If you've got two kids, you can buy them two of these instead of one and have them fight over an iPad, you know. So there are there are real benefits to that. There's a benefit to spending £180 on a tablet instead of spending £340 or something.
And there we must leave it for this week. Thank you so much, Fevzy. More next week at the same time. Meanwhile, he's at Gadget Detective on Twitter, and his website is gadgetdetective.com.